Welcome to A State of Readiness, a podcast set as a fireside chat with business leaders to discuss what it takes for a company to be in a state of readiness and become a high-performance organization with your host, Joseph Paris. Hello, everyone. This is Joseph Paris, and you're listening to State of Readiness, a podcast set as a fireside chat between me and a senior business leader across industries. Today, my guest is Philip Holt, and he is a Senior Vice President of Operational Excellence at GKN Aerospace and a board member of the Operational Excellence Society. He studied engineering at Manchester Metropolitan University and management at the Wharton School of Pennsylvania and the University of Warwick. He's an engineer at Gillette. He was an engineer at Gillette and led the lean development worldwide at Philips for over 12 years. He achieved lean master status and has summarized his 30 plus years of experience and insights into lean leadership in his previous book, Leading with Lean, and his most recent book, The Simplicity of Lean. Welcome, Philip.
Yeah. Thank you. Very nice to be here, Joseph.
Am I to understand that you actually have three books out, or is it just the two, right? Leading with Lean and Simplicity of Lean.
Yes, just the two at the moment.
So, and by the way, audience, I've read both of these books. They're on the recommended reads of the Operational Excellence Society, and I think that you would enjoy, their simplicity and directness, certainly something for your library. So I've written a book and it's a bit of a challenge, isn't it?
I wouldn't say that, Joseph. I quite enjoyed it.
Oh man. Mine took 3 years. So you must be a silver tongued devil there, just able to write away.
I don't know about that. The first one came out, it was almost kind of in me. They say everybody's got a book in you, and Leading with Lean, I think, was just in me. The Simplicity of Lean actually took two rewrites. Had a lot of help from my publisher and my editor. So, but yeah, I really enjoyed it. I find it
now,
very fulfilling.
The Simplicity of Lean was the 2020 winner of the Axiom Business Book Award. I mean, so that's a quite an accomplishment. Congratulations on that.
Disclosure, it was a bronze winner, so it didn't win the gold award. I've got to hold my hands up there, but it was a bronze winner, and I'm very proud of the fact.
Yeah, well, I mean, deservedly so. How many contestants do you know were in that running?
I don't know the exact number, but it's literally hundreds of books. It's a large field that starts off there. So yeah, it's quite an accomplishment, and very, very pleased to have been a winner.
Well, super. So tell me a little bit about your journey. You started off as an engineer. What type of engineer at Gillette?
So actually, I started off even before that. My undergraduate degree was actually in polymer engineering, which was something that I practiced for nearly 10 years, designing and developing plastic injection molds for a tier one, tier two automotive supplier. And then I joined Gillette helping to develop the plastic componentry. And before then, going into a rotation, and as some of my colleagues at the time said, went on the dark side and got into supply chain and procurement roles. I had a bit of a varied career. I've been in, I would say most areas of business across my 30 plus years.
And you were at Philips for 12 years. Were you stationed in the UK or were you there in the Netherlands?
Yeah, I spent a good 9 years of that time in the Netherlands, first in the north of the Netherlands for a couple of years, and then later on in Amsterdam for 7 years.
So you're responsible for the lean deployment worldwide. So now I was at Philips in the Netherlands, and they had this, I want to call it a resort, like a hotel conference center that was owned by them at the time. It might still be. Did you conduct your trainings there, or did you go further afield, or both?
So as we did them globally in different venues, but yeah, the place you're referring to was an old Dutch castle called Groenendaal, towards the south of the Netherlands. They don't own it anymore. I believe, unfortunately, might have even closed down now as a a resort, but it was a really great place to train. It was one of my favorite places to do training, just because of the environment of it. But no, our training was undertaken across the world, many venues, because of course Gillette was a global company with employees all around the world.
Right. You mean Philips, right?
Sorry, Philips. I apologize, Philips. Yes,
that's all right. So, tell me about the simplicity of Lean.
Yeah, so the simplicity of Lean, it was interesting. I'd written the leading with Lean. It had done pretty well, and I was getting some really positive feedback, reviewing very well, getting personal feedback. But what was interesting was a lot of people said, look, I love the idea of leading with Lean and the leadership principles, but you talk about a lot of the methodologies and the approaches in Lean that actually I don't really know about. So it became very clear to me very quickly that a lot of the concepts in leading with Lean I hadn't gone into enough detail of for many of the readers. So the concept of the simplicity of Lean was to really get into the nuts and bolts of how do you make Lean work in an organization? How do you use it to reduce or remove the complexity, which allows you to deliver that excellence, to become operationally excellent? So that's kind of the genesis of the book. And what I do through the different elements of the book is look at how do you develop the culture through a people focus. So how do you engage people? How do you then create that kind of Kaizen every day approach so that you've really got engaged people? And those two elements are what I call the people elements of it. And then the process elements, or the process improvement elements. How do you engage the whole organization in Kaizen events so that we're identifying waste and we're redesigning our value stream and making those step changes? And then how do you get the few but important projects and make sure that you're really delivering the step changes that you need across the organization? And brings in tools like Horsham Canary and policy deployment or policy deployment. So that was the concept of the book. And as you go through each of the chapters, it really, really delivers that message of how do I apply this in a practical, straightforward way.
Yeah, you know, I think that's part of the challenge sometimes in getting people to engage is that they can't relate to our syntax. We make it too complicated for them. So I like the notion, the idea of taking Lean and distilling it down to its finite components that people individually can grasp. And is that one of the purposes of the book, is to penetrate deeper into the organization?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in leading with Lean, one of the concepts or one of the leadership styles I talk about is mosquito leadership. And it's really looking at how everybody in the organization can be a leader and can influence and impact the business outside of the normal sphere of influence. And in the simplicity of Lean, I really, really, delve into that and show people how each individual can apply these concepts in a positive way, without them being too complicated.
Yeah. I've read both of your books, of course, and the one thing that I enjoyed about both of them is they're easy reads. I didn't have to, struggle with the syntax. The examples that you shared were clear and these are books, both of them, that a layperson can pick up and understand the message and the wisdom that you're trying to share with them. So, really excellent job there. And the reason I bring that up is I feel that one of the, and I'm sure you'll share your experiences, whether they're contrary or reinforcing, that one of the challenges these programs face is that the people don't understand it. And I'll give you an example. I was on LinkedIn. You were on LinkedIn too. But there's this conversation that was going on, and the person asked me to compare and contrast operational excellence to Lean Enterprise. Now, I study operational excellence. I don't study Lean Enterprise. There's a lot of material out there, but I don't, propose that is my expertise. And he offered a definition that Lean Enterprise 4.0 can be defined as a process-oriented, digitized, value-adding network, as well as the waste-free interaction of humans, organizational aspects, and technical systems in a fully interconnected and integrated system. Do you know what I just said?
No. There was a lot of words there, but not a lot of meaning.
So could you imagine, and this is what I posed to the gentleman, could you imagine going to the warehouse, and saying you're going to be part of the Lean Enterprise 4.0 initiative, and the warehouse guy is going to say, well, what's that? And you're going to, he's going to hear this description, and what's he going to think? Right? I mean, they'll never get these people on board. And I believe, the takeaway, the real value of your books is that it does make it accessible to the layperson. And as you know, that unless we're able to all sing off the same hymnal, okay, and understand, we can't get aligned. And if we can't get aligned, we can't get the commitment. Without the commitment, nothing happens. It collapses. So what are your thoughts on any of that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's ultimately, one of the advantages I guess I have in authoring these books is that there's no underlying reason for me to write them other than to share my knowledge. I'm a salaried employee. I'm not a consultant. I'm not trying to sell my wares through the book. I actually just, incidentally, all of the profits that I make personally on the books go to charity. So I've not made a penny off the sale of these books. It's really a labor of love when I write these, because I genuinely believe that by applying lean thinking and becoming a lean leader, we make business better through our people, and we make our people's work lives better. So to me, it's really about enabling people to enjoy their lives better by having a more fruitful work experience, and ultimately making business better and making society better. So if we can do that, that to me is fantastic. And the only way we can do that is to engage people, and you only engage people by helping them to understand how they can make their work and their life a bit better every day. And you only do that by using a language that they can learn. And I say, I think that's really important to say that they can learn, because I do have the debate very often with people about using some of the lean language, because I unapologetically use terms like Kaizen, like Kaikaku experience, like Hoshin Kanri. And I use those terms. I don't try to use too many of them. There's a whole vocabulary I could use, but I choose selectively certain words that I think really differentiate between the corrupted use of the English translation of those words and the true meaning of lean thinking behind them. So to me, it's not about completely dumbing it down, because people aren't dumb. Most of the people I work with on this, they've got lots of skills that I don't have, and many of them are far more intelligent than I am. So it's not about dumbing things down, but it's about using some language and some principles that everybody can buy into, can get to know, and in their busy lives can say, yeah, I'm going to spend a little bit of time to learn those so that I can make my day-to-day work better.
Yeah. Excellent. So, I agree with you. People could get tripped up on the syntax, but there are certain words that are uniquely descriptive. When you use words like, Hoshin Kanri and Kanri and Kaizen, those mean something specific. And they're very descriptive, assuming that people, understand their meaning. But then there's a point of overkill where people have to start learning Japanese in order to understand what it is that you're trying to say. And that reaches a tipping point, where it becomes noise and it's no longer value add. So that's really cool. So, now you're GKN. You've been there for how long?
Just over a year. I'm just about starting to learn how this business works after a year.
Okay. So, what are some of the values at GKN Aerospace?
Well, Again, I've been very fortunate to work for companies that I think have got good social values and you know, are very people-orientated. So, you know, Gillette was a great example of that, later to be part of Procter & Gamble, but I worked when it was independently Gillette. Philips, fantastic company with a deep social conscience. And again, you know, very much got values. And I've joined GKN Aerospace, and again, very much a company that is very people orientated. It's very committed to its people, and it's very committed to sustainability and being a good corporate citizen. So, you know, a good example is where we're in this current crisis with the coronavirus. And you know, the first headline of what we're trying to do now is first protect our people. And that's the first statement that comes from our executive committee down. So, you know, a company is very much value orientated, and that's integral to the lean transformation that we're going through.
Yeah, I was doing a workshop for a utility in the United States in January of this year, and they had a motto that I never heard before. I thought it was really, really great though, because you know they're working on electric power lines and gas lines and leaks and all sorts of catastrophes can happen, and their motto was, "Go home as you came in." And I thought that was a really strong motto. So simple. Go home as you came in. So yeah. And with respect to what did you want to achieve with your book? I mean, if what's success to you in with your books, two of them now?
Well, success for me is to disseminate, you know, my learning to as many people as possible, and for them to actively use that knowledge to make that their learning, and to apply it practically, and make their organizations better. It's really a, you know, my personal altruism to industry, to business, to try and disseminate that knowledge so that people can use it for good.
Super, super. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll start talking about some of the more philosophical aspects of how you approach your work environment, how you engage others, and how they engage you back. So you've been listening to State of Readiness. This is Joseph Paris, your host, and our guest today is Philip Holt. This episode of State of Readiness, sponsored by the Operational Excellence Society, a think tank, a creator and aggregator of knowledge and know-how, serving businesses and professionals who wish to learn more on the various topics which combined comprise the discipline of operational excellence. Learn more at www.opexsociety.org. Welcome back. This is Joseph Paris, and you're listening to State of Readiness. Our guest today is Philip Holt. So, Philip, what does an operationally excellent company look like? I mean, if I were to stub my toe, accidentally trip over it, how would I know?
Yeah, I think, you know, if I look at it kind of from a high level, I would say that the organization has a clear purpose, and everybody in that organization understands that purpose. And that purpose filters down from the top echelons of the organization right to the shop floor and to the associates on the shop floor. But I think what you will notice is that even that terminology I've used from top to bottom won't really be in their vocabulary, because they'll have flipped or inverted the triangle, and everybody in the leadership roles will understand that it's their job to support the workforce, the people adding value, the people who create that customer value on a day-to-day basis. So that's one thing you would observe. And then one thing that we talk about, you know, in GKN Aerospace at the moment, and something that I'm really big on promoting, is there will be an army of problem solvers. In most traditional organizations, you see that only experts solve problems. In an operationally excellent organization, everybody is solving problems every day. And I think that army of problem solvers is a key differentiator.
Well, I mean, you know, GKN, you know, builds civil airframes, engine components, you know, for aircraft. These are, if these components go bad, people are going to have a bad day. So the attention to detail and the level of quality, I mean, people have got to be on their game when they're showing up to work and producing these products.
Oh, absolutely. And we've got a really committed workforce. There's a massive pride in everything we do. We're a fantastic engineering company. We've got hundreds of years of pedigree. The aerospace business that I work in, it's an amalgamation of, a number of businesses that have come together over the years through merger and acquisition. Proud ones like Fokker are from the Netherlands, Volvo Aerospace from Sweden, parts of Airbus, parts of Boeing, etc. So, we've brought together lots of different heritages, but one commonality we have across all of GKN Aerospace is that pride in what we do. So what we're trying to do with our lean transformation is harness that pride, harness that, that commonality and the pride in what we do, but make the way we do it far more effective to become really operationally excellent.
Yeah. So how do you engage the workforce on this journey?
So you talked before, you asked me before the break about our values. We've got values that, five core values, the power of five, as we call them. We want a safe environment for everybody, and that's not just the traditional safe, it's about psychological safety as well. We want respect and care for everybody. We want to be open and honest in everything we do. We want to innovate, and that's part of that is the innovation in the big innovation, the new products, the parts that we work with across the industry, but also Kaizen every day. And then finally, we want everybody to have ownership for what they do. So, we're really establishing those values across GKN Aerospace. And that also comes into the diversity and inclusivity of our business. We really pride ourselves in being a company that's committed towards diversity and inclusivity. And then, the final bit of that, and our CTO is massively committed to this, is the sustainability, that good corporate citizenship by helping the air industry, the aerospace industry, to be a sustainable industry as we go towards electrification and other technologies to reduce our impact on the world's environment.
Well, right now the airline industry, aerospace industry in general, is struggling a bit. My oldest son works for Lufthansa Technik, and he told me just yesterday that at Frankfurt, where he works, they closed one of the three runways, and they're using it as a parking lot for the unused aircraft right now, because they don't have a place to put these aircraft, because they're, a fleet of them is almost always in the air, and airports plan on those planes not being at the airport. So these are some, challenging times. I'm believing that they're temporary, but it seems like they, we hit a full stride, and then all of a sudden it stopped, and that must be fairly challenging. Is GKN, putting in place an action plan to address these things as they unfold?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's a challenging time for everybody, wherever you are in the world, I think, at the moment, and our economy is being hit terribly. Yeah. But yeah, we're working, again, we've one of the things we put in place that launched the beginning of this year was a One Aerospace approach, and it's given us far better connectivity with our customers and with our suppliers. So we're working very closely across that supply chain to make sure we try and manage, cash not only for ourselves, but for our customers and for our suppliers. So trying to partner up as best we can in these difficult times.
So what's a successful business look like?
Well, a successful business for me, and I think it's great to see that this is being more widely accepted now, is, its social impact should be the key measure. Now, ultimately, those are easy words to say, but ultimately a business needs to make money. But again, one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about lean thinking is that, I think if you really look at those companies that have become operationally excellent through lean thinking, they are more profitable, than the average company in their industry. They've normally got a much better record in terms of, you know, sustainability indices, corruption indices, pollution. However you measure them, they usually fare significantly, I would even argue they always fare significantly better than the industry average. And in fact, they're normally innovators and leaders in their industry. So to me, actually, you can make more money as a business, give more shareholder value if you focus on your own people and the society that you live in. And, you know, I think that's a successful business that's contributing to society as a whole, looking after its own people, and then giving shareholders a fair return for their money.
So at the end of the day, you know, when you go home and, you know, all of these, you know, fairly profound statements, and, you know, they are profound. How do you reflect? You know, what do you do at the end of the day to, you know, look back and think, geez, did I accomplish what I wanted to accomplish? You know, did I live up to my values? Is there anything I could have done better?
Yeah, so I practice something which I ask the reader to practice in both of my books, which is Hansai. And the practice of Hansai is deep reflection. Again, it's something that's a Japanese term because it's culturally Japanese. And I unapologetically use that word because it's different than the English translation. Because it's really about looking inside, looking internally, and looking at every experience you've had during the period that you're reflecting on, and seeing what you did to make that successful or unsuccessful, and what you could do differently or better in the future. So I practice Hansai for a minimum of 10 minutes every day. I normally try to do a little longer. I normally try and reserve half an hour. And then at the end of the week, I spend at least half an hour, sometimes up to an hour, just really reflecting and thinking about how can I be better. And this isn't just about business. I've you know, over the past few years, this has become about how do I reflect on my life? You know, how do I practice Hansai on my life?
So what's the environment when you reflect? You know, do you just do it on the drive home? You know, do you have a special ritual, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, I guess, you know, 80% plus of the time I'll be doing it in my either in my hotel room because I travel a lot, or in my home office. So I try to do it in a space where I can sit and really just do the Hansai. I would say kind of reflection moments in my car or when I'm running or at the gym, those aren't really Hansai, because to me, Hansai, you need to be all in it. So it really is about finding a space, finding a quiet space, and just taking that time to reflect. And sometimes I write notes as things come out of that Hansai. Sometimes it's really about just closing my eyes, and, you know, some might call it meditation, but I really don't know if I'm going in a meditative state, but it's really just about Hansai, about that reflection.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it sounds to me, you know, I would use the term lifelong learner. I mean, not just externally, but internally. And what does that mean to you? I mean, would you consider yourself a lifelong learner? And, you know, how would you know?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm a voracious reader. I love to learn. You know, and then again, that Hansai, just to kind of finish off on that and extend onto that, you know, it's, there's three key questions that you ask yourself when you're doing a Hansai. And then, you know, this links to me about being that lifelong learner, because you ask yourself, what were your key learning points for the day? You know, what are the changes that you could make in the way that you act or think or behave? And then what are the current problems that might help to solve? And, you know, those are the kind of starting questions, beginner questions that you can use to practice. But again, if you do that about everything that you experience, you know, that's when you start to really see life as a learning opportunity. And I do think that the old fashioned, I mean, it's funny because I've got a eldest daughter who's just kind of graduated university, and a younger daughter who's just doing a GCSEs in the UK, the exams they do at 16 years old, which have been interrupted a little bit by or disrupted bit. But, you know, and I'm talking to them about the fact that don't consider, you know, your secondary education and your tertiary education as the end of your learning. You've got to think about, how do I learn throughout my life? And I wouldn't be in the role I am now if I just continued from my university degree.
Mm-hmm. Good. So, you ready for the speed round questions here?
Yeah, why not? Why not?
All right. So, who is the one leader you looked up to most and why?
So I've got probably three or four, but you've asked me one, so I'm going to choose one. Simone Nordegraff. She was my leader for, or my manager and my leader for about a year and a half at Philips, but had a significant impact on me. And she was the one, and that's because, she'd really, as a woman, she'd got to really the height. She was the executive vice president for accounting operations in Philips, but had a real care for people, a real passion for getting improvements in the business by really caring about your people, coaching your people, and helping them to solve their problems. And she had a profound impact on me, and she's continued in her career. She now is a kind of a life coach, acting independently. And as I say, very much have a massive amount of respect for her.
Super. That's a, that's usually not the answer I would get. Is that somebody that you've actually worked with? Sometimes it's your father or something like that. But that's really she must have been she must be an incredible woman.
Absolutely.
So, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Oh, the best piece of advice I've ever received was, we were in Japan when we started our journey, and a sensei from Toyota, he was talking to us through a translator. And he was asking us questions about what we were doing, what we were going to do on our lean journey. And then somebody mentioned 5S, and he smiled, and then he stopped, and then he said, "If you can't do 5S, you can't do lean." And there's never a truer statement been said. So that's the best advice I ever received.
It's so obvious that that's a truism. It's the fundamental element of lean. If you can't do 5S, you can't do lean. I couldn't find fault with that statement. Never really thought about it, but I never it's an absolute. So, what's a personal habit that contributes to your success?
So we've already talked about it. So, in the spirit of quick fire, it's hand sigh, and I think I've already explained why it's been so impactful.
So, this last bonus question. Sometimes I catch people off guard. What is, if you had one do-over, if you could do anything over again because you didn't like the way it turned out, what would be the one do-over and why? Or what would you do differently?
So the one do-over would be, the first 5 years of the lean deployment at Philips, I would do completely differently, and then I wouldn't, because I made so many mistakes. But if I didn't make those mistakes, I wouldn't have learned as much as I learned. So I'm giving you a little bit of a politician's answer there, but I would both do it all completely differently and do it all the same at the same time.
So, is this where your daily reflection came into play? Did you start the daily reflections during that process, or did you always do it?
No, I would say I've always been a relatively reflective person, and the key reason, I think I didn't mention this in the hand side, the key reason is I think that too many of us, and I did this a lot when I was younger, we ruminate on mistakes, and we beat ourselves up about mistakes, and we keep going back to them. And mistakes are something you can't really rectify, they're in the past. And I think hand sigh is a way of taking ownership for things that have gone badly, also things that have gone well, but then learning from them, wrapping them up, putting them in a box, and closing the door, and not worrying about it again because you've got your learning. And I think that to me, was something that I'd started to get better at. But when I really learned about hand sigh, and that was about a year or two into my lean journey with Philips, that's when I started it, and that's when I really think I started to take off. I would say the first year and a half to 2 years, I was a project manager of a lean transformation. After that second year, I would say I started to become a lean leader, or at least a lean leader in training. And I'm probably still, I'm a lean leader in training.
Yeah. Oops. I actually kind of anticipated that as the answer, because you were struggling, as you said, for the 5 years. But then, you know, you being the inquisitive life learner that you are, there had to be a point there where you put a structure around it and said, I have to reflect on this. And where did you learn that technique?
So it was in one of the businesses that we benchmarked. I talked to somebody about this, and they talked to me a little bit about it, and then I ignored it for about a year and a half. So it was a company called Omron. It was on the Japanese Kaikaku experience we went on, and they, one of the people I was talking to, told me about this, taught me about it, and then, like I say, ignored it for about a year and a half, and then I read about it again. And then I started to practice it, and then I thought, oh, I've just wasted a year and a half not doing this.
Good. Well, thank you very much for sitting in, with me and chatting today and sharing your wisdom of the years. It's been a real great pleasure.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure as well, Joseph. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
So you've been listening to the wisdom of Philip Holt. I'm Joseph Paris, and this has been another edition of State of Readiness. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to State of Readiness. You can discover more episodes and learn about the book written by Joseph Paris of the same title at www.state-of-readiness.com. You can learn more about Joseph Paris at www.josephparis.me/card.